It's Keith Tomasek, and you're listening to The Inadequate Life, a podcast about the creative process and people whose lives depend upon it. On today's show, Louise Petrie. Louise has been nominated for a Tony Award, and she's worked with some of the top names in musical theater. Louise is known for playing Fantine in Les Misérables and appearing alongside major orchestras. Louise and I discuss how a high school music teacher changed her life. We talk about the creative process behind producing, writing, and starring in her new show, On the Rocks, and what it's like auditioning for the world-renowned director, Gary Griffin. That's coming up on The Inadequate Life. Hey, it's Keith Tomasek here. Thanks so much for joining us once again, or joining me once again. Be sure to visit my website, by the way, StratfordFestivalReviews.com, because Louise has agreed to give away a pair of tickets to see her at her new show at Toronto's Théâtre Passe-Muraille. That's the name of the theater, Théâtre Passe-Muraille. It's a new show Louise has put together called On the Rocks. It's a really limited run. It opens Wednesday, September 25th, and closes Saturday the 28th. And I'm giving away a pair of tickets on my site, StratfordFestivalReviews.com. So check that out. Or for more information about Louise's show, you can always check out www.passemuraille.on.ca. That's the theater. It's passemuraille.on.ca, passemuraille.on.ca. And before we get on to the interview, just a reminder, as always, the show is sponsored by Stratford Tea Leaves. Karen Hartwick, who owns and operates the small business, is a certified tea sommelier. So if you like tea as much as I do, and I've got a little bit of her hibiscus heart right here right now, go online and visit StratfordTeaLeaves.com or visit the shop next time you're in Stratford. Hey, I got an email from Bob in Halifax that I just wanted to share because he kind of writes something that I was a little concerned about. I'll just read you the email. Keith, he writes, where the hell have you been? Just as I started to get into your podcast, you disappear like a magician's assistant. What's up? Isn't it you who ends every show reminding us creative people not to fear failing? And didn't you quote comedian John Wing, who in your podcast says, produce, produce, produce. Hope you're back soon, Robert in Halifax. Guilty. I am guilty. I have been busy, and I've kind of avoided doing the podcast, and partly for fear of failing, I got to say. I thought the last one I did with John Wing was the best one to date, so I was a bit nervous about doing another one. And then I contacted Louise, and she was like, yeah, let's do it, which is the kind of woman she is. So I'm really excited about this podcast. And honestly, I was quite taken at school. I was super busy teaching at Western University in London, Ontario. And then it was tennis. My wife is she's a world champion amateur tennis player, and I'm trying to play the game. And we got totally taken up and went to Cincinnati to watch the pros there. And that's where they go before they go to the U.S. Open, which is on right now. And as I'm recording this. And anyway, so I've been totally taken by tennis and school, and it's just all sort of been too much. Anyway, I'm back at it, and I think I'm going to try to make the podcast bi-weekly, at least until November-ish. So I'm going to try to do one every other Monday, just so you know. Okay, that's enough of that. I'm back on track. So it's time for my chat with Louise Petrie. She is an amazing woman. She's a gutsy artist, and she's not afraid to throw caution to the wind and flex those creative muscles. She's not afraid to show them either. And if you take a look at the picture on my website, theinadequatelife.com, you'll see she's just got it all laid out to bear there. Her whole body, naked, on a rock. Hence the title of the show, On the Rocks. Anyway, it's a great picture. We talk a little bit about it in the podcast. We had so much to talk about, I completely forgot to ask her about her connection with the upcoming Sting musical. That's right, from The Police. Sting is working on a musical called The Last Ship, which, if you believe Chris Jones in the Chicago Tribune, might get a tryout in Chicago. And Louise is connected to the show. She's already been speaking to the people involved. And, of course, she was the one who created the role of Donna Sheridan in Mamma Mia that she got nominated for a Tony Award for. And she's going to be in Chicago. We talk about that in the podcast. So who knows? We might see her in Sting's new musical, or we might not. Anyway, I forgot to talk about it. There's so many other things to talk about, and you'll get to listen to them right now, because here we go. Here's my chat with Louise Petrie. Here we are in Alliston. How long have you lived out this way?
Since 2005, May 2005, we moved here from New York.
And could you walk to work? Were you able to walk to the show?
The first year, yes.
That must have been so cool.
But then we bought a place up, Riverside, West End, right by Riverside Park. And then I did walk it, but it was a long schlep, so I didn't walk it all the time. But yeah, we enjoyed living there, but I think, you know what? After a while, it's like you just want the buzz to stop.
Yeah, never ends.
It doesn't
stop. Well, that's when you get a house in the Hamptons.
Well, yeah, we couldn't afford that. So,
I know, it's amazing.
So we had to sell our apartment in New York so we could buy this.
Sure, that's cool. So let's go back, way back to the very beginning, though, because I was reading a little bit about you, and I looked it up on the map, Smooth Rock Falls. So where would you go for fun? Like Timmins or Campus Casing? Or was there actually, so Northern Ontario, what did you do for fun in Smooth Rock?
Oh, come on, I was four when we left. Oh, so okay, I was born there.
Yeah. What would your dad do? There was a paper mill there, right?
My father was the accountant at the paper mill.
A numbers guy.
He's an accountant.
And how did he end up in Smooth Rock?
Good question. Okay. They met in Abitibi, Northern Quebec.
Your parents?
My father was the accountant at a lumber camp up there. And he met my mom because she worked in a men's clothing store in Lasar, which was the town closest to this place. And so that's how they met.
So was your dad from there, or did he get sent
up? My father's from the Ottawa region, actually.
And Franco-Ontarian? Or?
Yes, he is, yeah. Okay. But he always spoke English. My mother did not.
So he must have been way ahead of the gang speaking English back then.
Yes.
He had some smart parents who said, okay, you're going to learn both languages.
No. Actually, it was nothing to do with his parents. His mother died when he was two.
Oh, my goodness.
And he lived with his grandparents for quite some time, but it's because they lived in Turceau, which is just outside of Ottawa, and Ottawa is so bilingual.
Sure, yeah.
And so, yeah, he learned to speak English. As a matter of fact, he became an accountant. He studied,
sort of self-taught?
Correspondence course.
Oh, so cool. And then ended up in a BTB?
Yeah, my father, I found this out when I was much older, I think he would have liked to be an artist.
Oh, wow.
He could draw really well. I remember when I was a kid, I had a project once on Henry VIII.
Yeah.
And I couldn't find a picture of Henry VIII anywhere, but in the dictionary there was a tiny little picture. And my father made a big version of that, and it was the hit of my class.
It's amazing how as a child those things come to you at a certain, you have no realization. You know?
No, I think he... Back then, maybe it was like, you want to be an artist.
Well, he had no
choice.
That's
stupid.
Yeah,
I'll
sure.
do math.
Yeah.
I'll be an accountant. That's better. Yeah.
Probably more pressure today, you know, to go and get a job.
No, I think that's still there. I don't know why. Yeah. And there is no secure job anymore anyway.
Well,
why do people think being an artist
thing.
Is so weird?
You might as well do what you're going to love.
At least you're doing something that actually speaks to you.
Yeah. Did he feel trapped or did he seem like a happy guy?
You know what? It's hard to tell with my dad.
Yeah.
I don't think... You didn't know if he was happy or sad most of the time. Like, he was very, very tough for him to show emotions and stuff. And I think especially when we were little, I think he had a hard time communicating with kids. Hmm. I don't think he knew how to be.
Hmm.
And that got better as we got older.
Sure, yeah. You just grow into
it. I remember not being able to talk with my dad. I didn't know what to say.
Wow.
I know. It's weird, eh?
That's fascinating.
But he was such a good guy.
Yeah. Huh?
My God, you knew that he loved us and he worked like crazy to give us everything. But my mother was much more exuberant and she always talked for the both of them.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a cool household that must have been. It sounds like it was fun and creative and lots of sparks flying.
Yes. And then Smooth Rock Falls. He got offered this job. And so they lived there for 8 years, I believe. And they had the best group of friends ever there. We called them all Uncle So-and-so and Aunt So-and-so. I don't think my parents ever had friends like that again.
Yeah, well, it's a big change, going from a small town to a big city like Montreal.
Yeah.
So a great place to grow up, though. So,
yeah.
And where did you get exposed to the culture? Because obviously there was there music in the house growing up?
There was music as far as, playing records.
Yeah.
And my mother loved to sing. And she sang a lot. I sang all the time. I was a kid who went around singing all the time. But I talk about this
in the show?
In the show that I've been working on. Yeah, when I was a kid, I loved to sing. So did my sister. And we sang together a lot. And we took a lot of car trips when we were kids. Uh-huh. We would sing all the way. My sister and I, we had all these songs worked out with little rhythm bits and little harmonies. And
yeah.
And my mother loved to sing, and she sang like she was a super loud, you know, she's one of those. So,
and not afraid. And did she have a good voice? Like, I sing like that.
Not great, but she didn't care, and I love that about her.
Well, there's hope for my son.
She still sang like crazy.
That's what I do, but I know I can't sing.
It doesn't matter. It's fun. Who cares?
I have a little bit of rhythm, but no concept.
When it's for fun, who cares, right? Yeah. And she didn't. And I love that, but she'd sing with us too.
But that's so cool, because I'm always afraid I'm giving my son bad habits. So no. That's because I'm singing out of key or I'm missing.
Who cares?
You know what I mean?
Whatever.
And then you ended up, so Montreal, when did you start get the buzz? Were you performing on stage? And was that Child of Montreal or?
Oh, God. I didn't even know what a musical was till I was in university. Till the end of high school. Yeah truly. Yeah. Quebec didn't have musicals at all. Over there, it was either they had a lot of variety shows,
right?
And that
that's
kind
the big
of thing.
In the Francophone. Let's put on a show, exactly beautiful spectacle.
But musicals?
But with a singer, not a musical. Yeah.
Never heard of it.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It wasn't until I was in high school and we took a school trip. The bus brought us to Toronto from Welland to go see Godspell. Bayview Playhouse.
Was that the one that Andrea Martin and Gilda Radner and Paul Schaefer was involved in that?
And I was in grade 12. And my girlfriend at the time reminded me of this years later. She said, you turned to me and you said, I want to do this.
That's so cool. And that was the show. Like, that launched a million people's careers.
And then that ended up being one of the first shows I ever did, as a matter of fact, now that I think of it.
So let's go. So you're in Montreal and then Welland. Again, another move just because of business and sort of thing.
No.
You guys chose to move to Welland.
My mother, because the whole FLQ separatism thing.
See, I remember that. As a kid, like 6 or 7 years old, I remember being scared.
My mother was freaked out by that.
People were frightened.
She did not want us to be. I think she thought, if they win, we're going to be cut off from the world.
Sure, yeah.
And so she wanted to get out in case. And she wanted us to learn to speak English.
Yeah.
And so Welland, because my mom has a huge family from Abitibi. All her brothers used to work in the mines up there. Yeah. But then as the mines closed, one of them ended up in Welland. There's lots of industries and whatever.
Yeah, that was busy.
And he told the others, and a whole lot of her family ended up in Welland. So that's why we moved there.
So did you miss it then? Because then you wouldn't have, did you, going from Montreal to Welland, was there a huge change for you?
Oh, God. Yeah. Of course. Are you kidding? It's like, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a big culture shock, and we had just gone through Expo.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
We'd get on the subway, we'd go to Expo, we'd go see Gilles Vigneault in concert.
Yeah, Gilles Vigneault in concert.
Oh, my God. Yeah. And my parents would go see plays, and all of a sudden, it's like you're in this tiny place. Yeah. Oh, my God, the milkman still had a horse.
Really?
We were just beside ourselves.
So how did you get out of Welland to go to Western? How did you make that transition? Someone must have helped you.
Yeah, when I was in high school, my high school didn't have a music program or a theater program, for that matter. When I got into grade 11, they built a wing on our high school, and that was going to be the music department. But I thought, it's probably recorders and choirs and stuff. I'm not interested. So I took another typing course. But then I saw, oh, my God, like full band, all these instruments. So I dropped that typing whatever and went into music. And, oh, my God, I became best friends with the music teacher, who was a young woman from Ottawa. And I, in grade 12, I'd gotten enough credits that I only needed like 3 or 4.
That's perfect. So you were a good good student?
Yeah. 4 different music classes, and I played a different instrument in each one.
That's hilarious.
But trumpet was my main instrument.
So you must have been a good student. You were like an A type student?
Yeah, okay.
And was that partly from your parents giving you that discipline? Where did the discipline come
from? No, I just was.
You just had it on your own?
I just was. I loved school, and I wasn't a kid who had to spend hours to work hard. I always had super high marks. I loved school.
So then so the music teacher from Ottawa who you hooked up with in high school,
Oh my God. Well, so in grade 11 or 12.
So you're knowing trumpet was your thing.
Trumpet was my main
instrument.
And
was there a guy out there playing like a Dox? I can't think of trumpet. No. Dox, you know, what was the guy? Maynard Ferguson from Montreal? You know?
No, I didn't know anything about those guys. It was Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
They
had a brass section.
And she used to let me use the music room, which was a big music room with a big sound system, record player back then. Yeah. And I used to put on 25 or 6 to 4.
Yeah, for sure.
And play along with a trumpet solo.
That
was my dream. I wanted to be able to play that trumpet, so I'd be in there just playing away with the recording.
What a trip.
That was great. But that is what changed my mind, because up until then, I wanted to be a math teacher. I was going to be a math teacher.
So following in your dad's footsteps, numbers.
And my mother would say, you could take over your father's business. By then, he was working just for himself at home. But that changed everything, man, that music program.
Yeah. It came in and screwed up all your parents' plans.
And so I decided I wanted to go study music. And maybe I wanted to teach music, not math, but music. So this music teacher, her name was Cheryl David. She helped me because I'd never done any conservatory. I had nothing, no level.
Yeah,
and if you're going to apply at the university to study music, you need at least grade 8, grade 9 piano. And I needed at least grade 5 trumpet. And I needed harmony and history and theory.
Sure. Yeah.
She taught me all this after school. Like, she would teach me theory and harmony, history. Oh, my God, she was amazing to me. And she would come and have dinner. After class, she would teach me privately, and then she'd come to my parents' house for dinner.
Those were amazing times, eh? When the teacher had that role with the student. You know,
she also taught me to drive, by the way, and used to lend me her car. She was pretty amazing.
See, that just doesn't happen today.
I mean,
you know, it probably does, but those people who do that are putting themselves so far out on the line to take those risks and create those deep relationships.
She and the music program, that's what turned my head around.
Yeah.
And then I went crazy, went to study with somebody, piano, to study conservatory stuff, which I'd never done. I'd always just learned popular songs.
Yeah.
So that was a huge deal. But I did it, and I did my conservatory juries and exams. Oh, my God. I got my grade 8 conservatory and grade 9. In my grade 13, I got grade 9 piano and all my history and theory and harmony. And then I went to 3 different universities to apply. And Western was the one I chose.
So did you, just a huge tangent in my head, I always think of this when I hear about these kind of stories. So what did you think of when you saw, or did you see Ted Dykstra's Two Pianos, Four Hands?
Yeah.
Because those kids were like forced from a very young age. And
that was a neat show for me to see. And as a matter of fact, whenever that was, it's quite a few years ago now, but when they were auditioning for a two female
cast. Oh, that's interesting.
I was doing Blood Brothers at the Drayton Festival.
Okay. Yeah.
And I decided, holy, I'm auditioning for that.
Yeah.
So I went to town and I practiced. There's a little church in Drayton. They let me use their piano. So I would be in there every day practicing like crazy. And I went in and auditioned. I know those guys.
Yeah.
I went in, auditioned for them, did all the piano stuff.
My understanding is that towards the end, the piano stuff gets really technical.
Oh, shoot, there's a lot of playing.
Yeah.
The Bach cantata, for God's sake.
Yeah.
I did it and they offered it to me. And I was so proud of myself, but I didn't do it. I didn't want my life to be all about playing piano for a year or two.
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted to do this as a huge challenge to myself.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, it was great.
You must have pissed them off, though.
I know.
you do the whole thing.
You
get, she's perfect. We finally
found. And she can act.
Oh, no, thanks. I don't really want to do it.
I knew it would be too much about playing the piano. Isn't that funny? And that's not what I wanted to be doing.
Well, but that's really good. You know, I mean, that's all about, you know, being self-directed as an artist and saying, okay, I could do this.
Yeah.
But is this really what I want to do?
And, you know, I hadn't played a lot of piano, that kind of piano, since university at that point.
Yeah.
So it was a huge challenge to say, can I work this up? Can I really work this up?
Yeah.
Yes, let's go for it.
Yeah.
And just practicing that much again, it was great.
I bet it was fun.
Yeah.
And it's a fun show. So you get into Western, so I'm in London, and then when you're all of a sudden, first 2 weeks in class, you're sitting around all these people who have probably gone through that whole conservatory, did you feel like a fish out of water? Cheryl helped you get into your...
No, I felt like I was behind, I was a piano major, of course, if you compared me to a lot of other piano players, I was behind technique-wise, for sure. But I managed to do okay. And I was in the education program, so it's not like I was in the piano performance program.
Yeah.
But you still had to be at a certain level. You had a big jury every year.
Right.
It wasn't until my fourth year at university that I did my first show ever.
Okay.
So, Purple Patches. who do a show at the university. I actually accompanied a friend of mine who was auditioning for the musical.
Yeah.
And Don Flexer, who is still alive, and he is the biggest name in community theater there. Yeah, I love him.
Yeah.
The show was called Flicks.
Okay.
It was a musical review by David Warwick and James Sarr. And Don Flexer was directing. And so I went in playing the piano for my friend who was auditioning. Because I used to accompany a fair bit. And after the audition, Flexer says to me, "How about you? Don't you want to audition for this? You look like you've got
you're getting into it and everything. Yeah.
Personality." And I thought, and to be honest with you, I mean, secretly, I've been singing, but I'd always kind of dreamed of singing. I just didn't know anything about musical theater. That's not...
Yeah, it wasn't part of your makeup.
So I said, okay, you know. So I auditioned for it. And he made me, during that audition, he made me sit on the side of the stage and sing. What did I sing? I think I sang Maybe This Time or Cabaret.
Okay.
But then he made me sing Falling in Love again. They taught me a couple lines of that Marlene Dietrich song, and he said, sit on the edge of the stage and sing that, because it was low, Marlene Dietrich, and I could sing low. And I remember that. I remember exactly what I was wearing that day. I could pick out that white shirt and those black pants. And that was the most amazing thing to me. I thought, wow, okay. And then I got it.
Yeah.
So I did it. Yeah, and that was my first show ever. And I could not have hit a better person.
Sure. Yeah,
like Don Flexer, who just loves musical theater to death, but is, you know, full of ethics and responsibility towards the people he's working with. And oh, my God. Oh, my God. And that's it. That show.
So that set you off.
Oh, my God. I thought, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
This is amazing.
Yeah.
And so I thought, no, I am not going to teacher's college, and I didn't.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, I changed my mind.
After your parents spent all that money and everything, and you, they weren't too happy?
No. They weren't mad,
angry.
They were, I think, really disappointed because they thought, because to them, I was leaving a surefire way to make a living.
Of course, yeah.
Steady paycheck, you know, health benefits, everything.
Yeah.
To do what?
Yeah.
A big question mark.
Yeah.
So, I think it was difficult for them, but God bless them, you know. They were so supportive, and they would come and see the little shows I was doing, and it took so long for me to get going, but they came to see everything.
And did you hang around London for a little while, doing community theater there?
I hung around there for a couple of years after I graduated.
So what was happening in your life at that time? Were you, like, just... was so driven and passionate about the music that you didn't need a boyfriend or you didn't have those heartbreaks?
No way.
Oh, okay.
Are you kidding?
There's people like that.
That's been the biggest part of my life is the freaking shitty relationships.
The drama off stage. Well, because you're driven. You're driven.
Do you know what? I'm not.
You're not.
I'm not driven in that, I got to get that gig. I got to meet that person. I got to do this. I got to schmooze.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I've gotten a little better at that.
Yeah.
But no, it's all heart and it's all gut. But I get sidetracked so easily because of exactly what you're asking me about now. It's all about the people in my life so much more than the work.
That's interesting. Well, that's part of the creative process is surrounding yourself. And I usually mention this at the end of the show, is surrounding yourself with the right people who will help you.
Well, it took me a long time to figure out who the right people were. How about that?
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
no.
But if you're that creative soul in a place like London, and, you know, there's not a lot of you there, I'm sure, and I'm sure there were more women than men. I'm just making assumptions of what it was like in the teaching faculty back then. But it was probably hard to find someone who had a genuine respect for your time. I'm talking about a relationship, not a mentor professionally.
It's
hard to find the right guy.
I had fun. I had great friends at university. But in my last year, third and fourth year, started seeing someone who was in the music program as well, a classical musician. And actually, the year after I graduated, we got married.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, I didn't know. So very young.
And then stayed in London one more year. And I did a couple shows at the McManus Studio.
Sure,
And one more thing with Purple Patches. And then we decided to move to Toronto.
Yeah, here we go.
But that was more... I mean, I wanted to do musical theater. I just had no clue how the hell to go about it. But he wanted to, you know, get a job with a symphony or something.
Yeah.
But that marriage lasted 7 years. And it was... You just said someone who respects it was not the case. Okay. And I think it was became a very difficult thing that I knew would never be resolved.
Hmm.
He thought
competitive
musical theater was crap.
Oh, wow.
That's not real music.
Yeah, and that's just the way he was.
And you know what? That's a really hurtful thing. And it just, you can only put up with it for so long.
Yeah.
And I was starting so slowly. I was working in offices.
And it was brand new. Musical theater was brand new to you at that point. It's not like you had to, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you were discovering and playing with the form. And,
oh, my God. I didn't even know how to even get a job in the musical theater. I was working as a secretary.
Yeah.
I was paying the bills that way and then trying hard. And I just, it took me forever. I did a bunch of industrials. That's what I did for quite a few years.
Yeah.
And then finally, through that, met some people who were actually doing musicals. And that's how I got into it. But
and then when
it took
me
a long time.
When did you realize, is there a sort of an intersection or an inflection point between your success, so you're doing the secretary thing and making money while he's pursuing the musical thing. Was there an intersection or an inflection point where you realized, hey, wait a sec, he's in my way. He's not helping me as a human being and as an artist move forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think once I started to get a little bit more stuff, it still wasn't great.
Sure.
It wasn't stuff in big theaters, but it was like, say, big industrial shows that did cross Canada tours.
Yeah, I remember those.
I know. I mean, yeah, but back then
they used to be a big deal.
We rehearsed for 3 weeks.
They were big. I did one. I went. I traveled to the Middle East with the United Nations Keep Peace for it.
Right.
We did one of those. We were rehearsing in Toronto. Sure,
full scripts,
big shows,
huge musical numbers. Yeah. I was having the time of my life, but then at home it was always, "Why are you doing that crap?" And so I think, you know, I knew it was a stepping stone to get to
where you're going to go.
But even that, I realized, was still crap in his mind. And I think, you know what? Yeah, only the classical music world was worthwhile.
Hmm.
And I think as I started to do more work in my field, I realized that I really loved it and that it was really hurtful to not be able to come home and be excited about
and
it and share it.
Yeah.
And Yeah, that and a few other things.
Sure,
but,
yeah,
you know, I mean, that's
things,
not...
Yeah.
But that was a big thing.
Yeah.
Of course, it's a big thing.
Well, it's important. If you're a creative person, you have to surround yourself with people who are going to appreciate what you do.
Yeah, and just sharing your happiness about it, period.
And the struggles when it's not going well, instead of saying, maybe you should stop.
Yeah, and do something
There's
worthwhile.
Enough of those people out there anyway.
Absolutely.
You don't need the person
who
you're coming
it?
Home to.
Yeah.
So this, now we're kind of getting into the personal... life. Are we overlapping with the show you're working on right now? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Give me like a thumbnail description of what it's about, and then we'll...
Okay, yeah. My show is called On the Rocks, and I'm opening the season for Theatre Passe-Muraille. It is basically an incredibly open, honest, disarmingly honest narrative of my life so far, I guess is what I would say. I really don't mince words, and I really go to some very difficult places. This is not one of those, I started here, and then I did this, and then I did that, and then I met. So it's not that.
Yeah.
It's much more about my personal life, the things that have hurt me, the things that have sent me flying with ecstasy, the things that I've had to work hard at, the good, the bad, the whatever. I talk about work, but it always has to do with the personal side of it, the personal effects of it. And that's why all the songs are original songs, because it's always me talking.
It just, when I read that you were doing this, I was like, I couldn't believe it. I'm like, oh my God, she's writing all the songs. It's her own story that she's writing in front of everybody, and you're opening the season. So I read about this, and I was like, wow, that's a lot to take on. Like, you're just carrying everything.
I'm producing it.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
As if that's
Am
not
I
enough.
Crazy or what?
No. You look great.
That a few times through this process. I'll admit to you, what the hell have I done?
You look great for someone who's got a show opening in, what, how many?
Well,
you probably know. Yeah, a couple of days. A couple, maybe a week. When do you actually
September 25th.
Okay, so very, very soon.
Now I'm learning it. Now I'm memorizing it.
Okay, because so I heard about this and I thought, that's insane. And then I saw the photo that you have on the program for Passe-Muraille, and you can see it online and it's on your website. And then it all made complete sense. It's such a beautiful photo of you. If the folks listening haven't seen it, it's an amazing photograph of Louise lying down fully naked on a huge rock. Like, there's just so much weight to that rock. And there's your body completely laid out for all of us to see. and the reflection, you know, on the ground. Anyway, it's just an amazing photograph. And when I saw the photograph, I was like, that's even more bold than the decision to make the show. But it's beautiful. But yeah. But at the end of the day, you look at it and you go, it's beautiful. So it's so inspiring and I guess drives up expectations for your show.
Yeah.
You know,
and you know what?
You're off to a great start. Let me put it that way.
Oh, my God. Well, good. I'm glad you think that.
Oh, for sure.
This started because Theater Pas Mirai, while I was shooting Over the Rainbow for CBC, they asked me to come in for a meeting at Theater Pas Mirai.
Let's have a chat.
And So I thought, okay. So they said, we would like some music in our season this year. And we said to ourselves, who would we like to have in our theater? And you're the person we would like. And so we are asking you, would you open our season with something, whatever you want? But that week, we would love if you would do something. So I actually was going to do some concerts, like three different concerts in rep.
Which is easy, not easy for you, but it's something you're familiar with.
But it's something I do all the time and whatever. Sure. Then we had another meeting, and as we talked, you know, it occurred to me, I thought all of a sudden, you know what, this is boring. I do this all the time.
Yeah, no, I get it, totally.
What's so exciting about this? Screw this.
Yeah.
I should write something.
Oh, my gosh.
Because I do have some original songs that I've written, that Joe and I have written together, that Diane Leah and I and Joe. So I was going to do half monologue, first act, and then the second act, original songs that maybe go with what I talked about in the first act.
Okay.
But then, still in that same meeting, I go, you know what? Nah. That's half-assed. I'm going for it.
Yeah.
No, I am writing myself a whole freaking show.
Wow.
I bravely volunteered to do this. I've never written a script in my life. And frankly, you wouldn't recognize the script from the first draft I sent.
Well, that's always the way.
Which is fine. Yeah. But at least it got me thinking about so much stuff. And I realized I didn't want to talk about the shows I've done. I wanted to talk about my heart, my life, my parents, the men in my life, the stuff that, not how I feel doing Mamma Mia, how I feel when I'm walking out the stage door.
Exactly. That's what this,
because I've just had the shittiest day ever and people think I'm having the time of my life up there. That's what I want to talk about.
Yeah.
And that's what it is.
Yeah.
And it's, well, that's super funny.
That's the inadequate life. You know, there you are. Everyone's thinking, hey, it's all coming of roses.
You know what? No, you have just gone out for dinner and had a couple glasses of wine and you're sitting on your ass in your seat entertain me.
Yeah.
I am the one who just had to go see the throat specialist today and my dog got attacked and I blah, blah, blah.
And here I go.
So don't tell me I'm looking like I'm having the time of my life.
Yeah.
This is hard work, damn it.
Yeah.
It's so freaking hard sometimes it's not even funny. Like anybody's work.
Yeah.
It's just that it looks like it's so fantastic and glamorous. It is anything but.
So go back to the writing process. Now, how much of the time at the very beginning in those first 2.5 months were you at the piano versus just at the terminal? Did you go back and forth or were you?
Yeah, back and forth. At the laptop, more, for sure. And I would take a break and go stand on the deck and look at the water.
I'm just trying to get my head around writing the stories or the vignettes, whatever, and then they probably found some meaning later on. But then you've got to actually come up with melodies and rhythms and then words at the same time.
No.
How was your process?
There are two or three songs that I had written already, amazingly enough.
Yeah.
Two of them are so perfect because I'd written the one song
at a time
about my husband.
Okay.
And when I talk about him in this show, I couldn't say it better than that song. But I actually thought I would use existing songs in this show to begin with. So that all got changed once I came back from Halifax. Back then, I was thinking I was going to use songs like One Fine Day and Someday My Prince Will Come and The World Goes Round. And
so even after the 2.5 months in Halifax?
Yeah.
Oh, I gotcha. Right. You.
But it wasn't until I came back and started working with a dramaturge and I started to say it out loud. And I thought, this seems so wrong. All of a sudden to be singing this song that is not perfect. And it's not me talking.
Yeah.
It's got to be me. So, new songs have been written to go. Joe has written the lyrics of these last three new songs, and I've written the music.
That's pretty cool.
So I will say to him, he did not see the script. at all. I would say, I'm talking about this at this point. I need a song about this. These are the images. These are the things I want to talk about. And he'd go off and write some lyrics. And then I'd look at them and say, yeah, okay, this is great, but not that particular. See, that my mother never would have done that. She would have done this.
Right.
So he'd go off and work that in. And then I'd sit at the piano and write the music.
That's amazing. Wow.
And now when I talk about when I was seven and my idea of my perfect life,
yeah,
it's my idea of a perfect life.
Let's talk a little bit about after the show, because you're super busy after the show.
Oh my
too.
God.
You go right into Annie at the Young People's Theater.
Yeah.
And I love Young People's Theater in Toronto, and I highly recommend anyone listening who can get to Toronto to go and see a show there, because it's such I love that they brought the ticket prices down. Like, it's affordable, world class theater in the heart of Toronto. You know, it's
listen,
amazing.
I did a year with Frog and Toad there. It was one of my happiest experiences ever in my entire career.
And I've been backstage. It's not a glamorous place.
No, it's not. Who cares? Oh, my God, it was great. And do you know that in Annie, I'm playing Miss Hannigan.
Yeah.
My husband will be playing Rooster.
How cool is that?
Actually, I'm doing Annie, this is crazy. While I'm in rehearsal, I have concerts in Niagara Falls and Lindsay two nights in a row while I'm in rehearsal. And then I have a concert with the Colorado Symphony in Denver.
Oh, my God.
The day before our dress rehearsal.
Oh, wow.
I know. So I know. I'm scared.
So when it rains, it pours.
I had these booked already when they asked me to do Annie. And God bless them. They worked around that. So I can do it. I can do it. That's okay.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Yes.
No. Yeah, no.
Right after Annie, I go to Chicago.
Now, how did you find out about... Now, did you audition for that gig?
Yeah.
How did that happen?
You know what? People so often say to me, I can't believe you still have to audition. And I think, who the hell am I to tell this freaking amazing director,
Gary Griffin.
I dream of working with him.
Yeah.
We have actually communicated about doing something together, but we've never worked together. He doesn't know me.
Sure.
Maybe I'm the biggest bitch in the world and diva who's tough to work with. Yeah. Maybe I don't take a director's notes or, you know, who knows?
Yeah.
They need to know that. I don't mind auditioning for anybody.
Yeah.
Come on.
Well, and plus it's a role of a lifetime. You know, Ethel Merman, Patti LuPone, everyone.
Do you know what? I have had two dream roles my entire career. Mama Rose and Gypsy. And Mame in Mame.
Oh, wow.
And I got to do Mame just a year and a half ago. It was the best. And I told myself, you know what? I've done Mame, and it was done well. And I had the best costumes in the world. If I don't get to do Mama Rose, so be it. I'm getting older now anyway. Who cares?
Yeah.
But if I do it, it's got to be good, or it's not worth it.
Well, you can't get much better than Gary.
My New York agent calls me and says, Gary Griffin is directing Gypsy for the Chicago Shakespeare Theater, and he would like to see you for Mama Rose. Would you be interested?
Yeah.
What? Would I be interested? Are you crazy?
That's pretty amazing, huh?
So I flew down there. They sent me all this stuff, scenes to learn and stuff. I memorized everything. I worked on it so hard.
I bet.
I was off book for that audition, and I was in there for 45 minutes. I can't believe it. That's what you hope for.
Yeah.
When you go, well, first, sit down. Let's talk. So we talked for quite some time.
You get nervous?
Do you know what? I never know when I'm going to be nervous. Sometimes I'm shaking in my boots, and other times I'm fine.
How was the morning? Tell me about that. So you fly to Chicago. You're staying in a weirdo hotel.
No, I flew to New York.
Oh, you flew to New York. It was in New York.
I flew to New York in the morning. I went straight downtown.
Oh, okay.
Had something to eat. Yeah. Waited.
In some restaurant, like on the street. Yeah.
No, actually, do you know what I did? I bought a coffee, and I bought a cheese and egg bun from one of those little carts.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
And I sat in the park.
Oh, that's beautiful, though.
And went over my lines.
That's really nice.
And I actually put on some mascara while I was sitting on a bench in the freaking park.
I love it.
And then I walked to the room, and I was first one of the day. So I did my 45-minute audition. And we did the scene, the last scene of Act 1, and then I sang Everything's Coming Up Roses, full out, did the whole thing. And then we talked about it, and then we did the scene again, and I did super differently. And he said, how did that feel? And I said, wrong. And he said, yes, but thank you for that. You did what I asked you to do. Thank you. Now let's split the difference. Do it again. And I did it again, and it was... Yeah.
That's really cool.
So God. That's what you hope, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Say, okay, make me work.
Yeah.
Make me do something even crazy. Who cares? You get to see if I'm going to do what you're asking me to do.
Yeah.
Is she going to go there?
But the key thing is you're honest. When he said, how did that make you feel?
How did that feel?
Yeah.
Wrong.
Yeah.
And he said, yes.
Yeah. That's good.
But yeah, exactly.
You're honest. So then, so then it's like any other prayer. Okay, well, thank you, Louise. We'll get back to you.
Yeah.
And then where'd you go?
I know. And then I got in a cab and I went back to the airport and I came home.
That's got to be weird, eh?
Yes, it is. Yeah. And but, then you come home and the next day we were leaving, my husband and I, to go to Saskatoon to a niece's wedding.
Sure.
We were sitting on the plane. I took my phone out to turn it off because the plane was starting to back away from the gate. Yeah. My New York agent calls. I kid you not. I see that there's a message from him, and I thought, no. So I call quickly, and I get the receptionist. I say, is Jed in? Please, it's Louise calling. He comes on the phone, and he says, you'll be swell.
Oh, my God.
You'll be great.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. That's
I screamed on the plane. Everybody's turning around looking at us. I went, no way, no way.
Yeah.
He said, yes, Louise, they really want you
to do it.
That's
so cool.
Oh,
yeah.
That's one of my happiest you got the royal phone calls. All right. Gotta tell you. Oh, my God. Look, I'm getting all goosebumps.
That's a perfect segue. I got a couple of questions. Some people, I put up on my Facebook page, Keith Tomasek on Facebook, that I was going to be talking to you. So a couple of questions people asked. One of them was, what advice would you give to young people in musical theater in their 20s and 30s? Because it's, they're at that point, they're at that, well, what would you like some,
oh
what,
my God,
what would you have wanted someone to say to you when you were that age?
I would have wanted someone to say to me, go see as much stuff as possible. Sit in the audience, look at these people up there and say, that sucks. He's not good. She's terrible.
Yeah.
He's great. Why is he great? What makes me respond to that person? Yeah. And then go talk to that person and say, do you teach? Or where did you go? How come you're so good? That's what I would say.
Yeah, that's good.
And see as much as you can, because you have to get smart enough about what works and what doesn't. What speaks to you and what doesn't. Don't assume you're good. Be hard on yourself. Be able to know the difference, whether you're watching it or whether you're doing it.
And I love the line, not only seek them out, but then seek out who inspired them.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's why I love your story of your high school teacher.
Oh.
And then Don Flexer in London.
Yes.
Yeah, and it goes on and on, I'm sure.
That's right.
So, and then a guy named Keith McKee, who's on Facebook a lot, he just asked me to ask you something about London. He's in London, and he loves London. He's a Londoner. And he just wanted me to ask you about any kind of... We talked about London quite a bit. Anything else at all about that city? You're going to come back? We've got a beautiful theater there.
Oh!
And Orchestra London Suffering. They'd love you to come
and
play.
And I've done concerts with Orchestra London. Yeah. I did a big fundraiser with them at the Grand Theater, as a matter of fact.
And then here's a good place to close. John Pollard online. Tell her we love her and her exceptional work, and we love her great heart.
Oh!
Okay, well, I don't know how to say have a good show in French. How do you say have a good show in French?
We say merde.
Merde.
Okay. Yeah.
Merde. Merci beaucoup, Louise.
De rien, merci à toi.
C'était mon plaisir.
Merci, ça m'a fait plaisir aussi.
Bonsoir, bonjour.
Bye.
Well, thank you very much for listening, and thanks to Louise for taking the time during her hectic schedule. If you enjoyed the podcast, please tell all your friends. They can find us on iTunes. That's right, we're on iTunes. Just search The Inadequate Life and you'll find us on iTunes. Remember, we're giving away a pair of tickets to see Louise in On the Rocks. That's her new show at Théâtre Passe Mirail in Toronto. To win or to enter the contest and hopefully win, just visit StratfordFestivalReviews.com. And you'll see a link to the contest there. One of the reasons I started this podcast is to remind everybody, and myself included, that we all go through ups and downs in pursuit of the creative inspiration. It's like you can never get your hands on it, can you? And part of the creative process, and it came up during the interview with Louise, and she's been through some huge ups and downs, is taking risks. And she certainly is a huge risk taker. And of course, inevitably, the failure that comes with taking those risks and challenging yourself and pushing your boundaries and not getting bored, like she said. If you're bored, there's a problem. And that's when it's time to start over. So don't let the tough times get you down, and be sure to listen to the good people you've surrounded yourself with. You know who I'm talking about. And most importantly, work hard and take care of yourself. I'm Keith Tomasek. This is The Inadequate Life, and I'll see you in a couple of Mondays. Bye for now.